Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 179. Yeah, it's Thursday night. We're actually on schedule this week, folks. We're back in action here for you, continuing our 2024 positional reviews for the fantasy baseball season, heading to shortstop tonight, a little more entertaining than the last couple positions as they've been rough. This one actually has some fantasy value. Before we get to that, a little housekeeping here. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
We are great, my friend. We have the voice back, first and foremost. So thanks for everyone who happened to listen to the second base show on Monday night. Appreciate you hanging through there with your sickness and my voice. My Hokies won tonight, Thursday night in Blacksburg. So
I'm gonna sweat that a little bit.
I'm pretty stoked. A little bit of a sweat, but I'm pretty stoked about that. We had a pretty damn good Cleveland Yankees game. Whew. Thursday night. We've got 2 weeks from when this releases on Friday. We've got our live show at First Pitch Arizona. Baseball forecasters in full go mode. So it's I know this is always the busiest time of year for me again, which sounds bizarre given that it's baseball in October, but it is. And I honestly wouldn't have it any other way. So I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm not a smoker, but after the end of that Guardians game, I felt like puffing on one. That was amazing. That was some goodness gracious. From Judge's laser to right field, that literally was like a foot, not even a foot over the fence, just a laser to Stanton to Big Christmas, just basically spitting all over one. The great play by Jimenez at second, not to mention the fat guy play at first by Naylor was glorious. For I played first my whole career, so that was a little simpatico. And then seeing David Fry just tattoo one to walk it off. That was playoff baseball at its absolute finest. I can't wait for game four on Friday. My expectations are still low. The Yankees are still a very, very good ball club. But that was fun to watch. Dodgers just keep putting a whooping down on the Mets. I don't know how this gets to a game six. I think Flaherty wraps things up on Friday. But we'll see how that goes. So I guess that's my thoughts on the postseason. Where do you see things going? Because I don't know if we're gonna get a whole lot of baseball after the because the bad part is the World Series doesn't start till next Friday, so there's gonna be a gap in action here pretty soon.
Yeah, with a potential game seven at first pitch would be freaking sweet. I don't have too much of a take. I guess my only take is I really enjoy the division series. The CS is honestly not as much. There's been a lot of blowouts on the NL side, and the outside of tonight where the Cleveland Yankee game was awesome. That one's kind of been, I don't enjoy watching the Yankees that much. Sorry to our friends in the Bronx, but the DS was awesome. The CS, we'll see. So hopefully the World Series makes up for it.
Well, if you thought this was bad, a Yankees Dodgers World Series is going to be so awesome.
I'm confused. Honestly, I think it will be awesome.
It should be great baseball.
But
the rhetoric is going to be rough. That's the way
I'll rhetoric wise. One thing I'm glad of rhetoric wise is Judge and Otani hitting home runs. Cause I was sick of them, of this stuff saying, oh, they can't hit in October. It's like four or five games. People give it some time. They'll be fine.
And then here's like the old man, get off my lawn from me right now. What's really annoying to me as a lifelong baseball fan that remembered watching postseason games on antenna TV, the fact you have to have FS1 to watch an LCS game, I think is just ridiculous. Like, the Masked Singer is on Fox instead of the LCS. Like, what are we doing right now? That's just the old man in me just kind of getting like, that's bad. That's bad to grow the game, as they say.
Yeah, that's an old man take, but that's fine.
So what can I say? It's all good. the
weirder thing for me is the like midday. Wasn't there like a Monday 2 p.m. Dodgers game?
Oh, there's the Dodgers Mets play at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific tomorrow on Friday.
Oh, they do? Which for me is awesome, because that's honestly that's the time I can watch, kind of have it on the background while I'm working. But once it's in my kids and dinner window on the West Coast, it's tough to sit down and watch a ball game.
Yep. I fully understand. I didn't have a little one tonight, so I actually got to sit down and watch. I haven't done that much, so I feel you there.
Yep.
All right. The other piece of news, it seems like we keep going back and forth on this one. We're down to 17 golfers now.
Yeah, we lost one.
We lost a noble soldier on this.
They're still alive, I think, yes. But we lost one for golf. Yes,
he's down to one leg, so he will not be making golf on Sunday. So if you're interested, we still have a few openings for Sunday golf at First Pitch Arizona. Regardless, we're having a great time for at least the 17 of us that show up, but there's room for more if you are interested.
Yeah.
All right, let's get cracking at it. We had catchers was kind of as expected. First base, not good. Second base, even worse. Give us some hope here, Ryan, when we talk shortstops.
No, so far, so this has been by far the best position that we will have reviewed probably all off season, but we'll see. At least definitely so far is shortstop. I got the normal board up for anyone watching either live or on the YouTube archive. Shortstop. So I'll go through this kind of same exercise of using the Fangraphs player rater, looking at the top 12 and how much dollars that kind of your shortstop one earned in 2024 on average this season. In 2024, the top 12 shortstops averaged $23 worth of value. So second base by comparison was $13. So almost twice as good. First base, I think, was $16, so much better than first base. $23 is leaps and bounds above those other positions, and it's an upgrade over last season. So last season, in 2023, the top 12 shortstops averaged $19, so that went up to $23 this season. Some of that is Bobby Witt, right, who had a $45 season, according to Fangraphs. Again, this is 5x5 scoring, but there were four $30 players. It was Witt, Gunner, Ellie, Francisco Lindor, all over $30. And if you recall the first base episode, not even one first baseman had $30. It was Vlad Jr. at 29. So very high end position, pretty damn deep position, which was kind of what we thought going in. But it's nice to finally have a position where I think we can get excited about and talk about all the good that happened here, because shortstop was pretty fruitful in 2024.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, we recapped the meatball draft, the first 11 rounds. A lot of shortstops went early. So far, there's two DCs that have been completed that have an NPC ADP right now. There are 12 shortstops in the first 60 picks of the early drafts right now. So it's quick math there. 12 shortstops in the first four rounds of drafts. Wow. Right now. So it shows you how much fantasy goodness they bring to the table. It's not even a... It does get a little weaker as it goes down the board, but still it also shows what they bring to the table up top, which big difference compared to these other guys. Like, we talked second base, and what was there, five in the first 50 rounds last year? Because it kept dropping off. Yeah. So it just shows you that where the attention is going on these drafts, to say the least.
Yeah, and second base had that just like there was speed, but there was no power, very little batting average. This has speed and a bunch of other stuff.
Like, just looking at the board here before we get started, lots of green early and kind of often for the first 10 or so picks. So you definitely got some love if you took some. And that's the first 10 shortstops this past year went in the top 47 picks. And most of them, almost all of them, except the one name we talked about a million times on this show last year, did not pay off. But we'll get to him shortly. Let's start back at the top here. And you mentioned him earlier, Bobby Witt Jr., third off the board, first shortstop off the board, obviously finished first at the position as he put together a season for the ages, Ryan. Bobby Witt Jr. hit 332, 32 homers, 31 steals, 125 runs scored, 109 RBIs, while playing in 161 games, over 700 plate appearances, and he improved his strikeout rate while walking.
Yeah.
Like, this is just... Yeah. 24 years old, and the guy has improved every single season.
That's the biggest thing for me, is the year-to-year improvement for Bobby Witt. You mentioned the walks going up every year, the strikeout rates going down every year, 21%, 17%, then 15%, which is pretty damn elite in 2024. But then also the power going up. Number of barrels for Bobby Witt Jr. each season he's been in the majors. 40 as a rookie, then 61 last year. And then 77 barrels. Like, he should have had more than 32 home runs. 77 barrels is crazy. So
yeah, that's not even 50%. Yeah, it's way below the average.
It's way below the average, which is roughly around like 60%. So if you roughly take that, say 80 barrels divided by two. Caveman math here, 40 home runs.
I got you. 77 barrels. 77 barrels times 0.6. That's a whopping 46 home runs, yes.
Did you do that on your stone tablet or on your laptop?
My iPhone.
Phone?
Okay. Yep.
All right, good. The it's just super impressive. Bobby Witt, if you went early with him, you are you are golden, especially when some of your other options in the top five, pretty much all of them, kind of sucked, right? You Spencer Strider was in the top five, Acuna, J-Rod, Bobby Witt was kind of the darling of that top five overall class. So very, very impressive stuff. If there's one, just one kind of tiny nit to pick, he was not as aggressive on the base pass in 2024. So I say only, but only in quotes, had those 31 steals. But hey, if you hit 330 and go 30-30, that'll work.
Well, it's fun because like Acuna was the unanimous number one, and it seemed like it always came down to, do you want J-Rod or Bobby Witt? That was like the two, yeah, the pick. And the saying always goes, you can't win your draft in the first few picks, but you can lose them. Picking Witt over J-Rod probably helped you win more than lose. Let's put it that way. So there is a little bit pros and cons to that situation.
And definitely Spencer Strider, as my satellite team would know. Because that was the decision actually late in draft season when we thought we knew Strider was healthy.
That's true.
Pitchers get pushed up. It was kind of Strider and Witt going 2-3. So,
yep, that's pretty crazy stuff there. The second shortstop off the board, ADP of 5, was Mookie Betts. Finished 7th at the position after finishing 3rd at second base. So that gives you a little more to how deep shortstop was compared to second base, as you mentioned. We talked about Betts felt like plenty on the previous show. Picked up 4 hits on Thursday night for the Dodgers. Do you have anything else to add for Mookie Betts?
No, since we talked about him, it is good to pick up that angle of finishing 7th at shortstop. And what did he finish? What did you say at second base?
Third.
That's a difference. The biggest difference when I was putting this board together that I saw, and maybe we'll probably hit on him later, but just to show one more data point to show the discrepancy between second base and shortstop is Bryce Terang. Yeah. So we mentioned Bryce Terang on the second base show, who finished 4th at the position. Bryce Terang was the number 14 shortstop. So it's just nuts to have the same player, same production, be a top 5 player at second and barely be in the top 15 at shortstop. That I feel like that's the example where it's like, holy crap, these two positions, even though they're right up the middle, right next to each other, were vastly different fantasy-wise.
Yeah, pretty wild stuff in that regard. Third shortstop off the board, 12th, ADP of 12. Finished 6th at position, and people might wonder how, because a lot of people were yelling that Trey Turner was not good this year, but he still put it together. He was hurt for a while, played in 121 games, hit .295, though, 21 homers, 19 stolen bases. What are your thoughts on Trey after this season?
A solid season. You're not kicking yourself if you took Trey to get the number 6 shortstop with a first-round pick. No, he did not really come that close to return the value. And yes, you certainly wanted more than 19 steals. I think the question going forward with Trey Turner is, as he starts to go deeper into his 30s, what does, you know, does that 19 steals, does that go back up to 30, or does that kind of keep going down a little bit? So would have been a pretty solid like 25-25 season for Trey Turner if he didn't get hurt, and again with a great batting average. So I still think I'm still pretty bullish on Trey Turner. I think he's been going like second round in some of these early 2025 drafts, and I think that's fine. I just you just start to wonder, when is that stolen base total going to kind of keep trending down?
Yeah, that'd be the biggest concern. And the positives, like you said, there's still optimism there, still hitting towards the top of the order in Philadelphia. That's not going to change things for a while. That team's going to be good for a little bit longer. So,
yeah. I mean, dude had 88 runs in, what do you say, 120 some odd games.
Like, yeah, that's pretty good.
It's absurd, man.
Yeah, pretty good stuff there indeed. Now to one of the most polarizing draft picks last February and March, Elly De La Cruz, ADP of 20, 4th shortstop off the board, finished 3rd at the position. And I think he surprised many by hitting .259 last year, 25 homers, 67 stolen bases to go with 105 runs scored. He also played in 160 games, Ryan. That was also pretty impressive. still strikes out a lot, but the boy got on base and he ran wild. So pretty impressive stuff there from Melody De La Cruz.
Very impressive stuff. The L I was holding up to the camera while you were talking was not for Ellie. It was my loss for not having any Ellie De La Cruz on any of my teams. He was a fade for me, and that turned out to be very wrong. I think the biggest thing with Ellie De La Cruz was just a little bit of a launch angle tweak. So I remember making this point. I think Ellie De La Cruz had the lowest fly ball rate of any qualified hitter in 2023 outside of Tim Anderson. And a 22% fly ball rate last year. Like, that is, it's very, very hard to get 15, 20 homers if you only hit one out of five balls in the air, especially when you strike out as often as Ellie De La Cruz does and still did in 2024. But Ellie took that 22% fly ball rate and bumped that up to 33% this year. And that was enough for him to kind of go bonkers on home runs and get those 25 home runs, hit 260. Like, that was a big part of that as well. And then obviously what you drafted him for, the stolen bases. So a very nice step forward for Ellie De La Cruz. We all knew he had the power. We just didn't know if he'd keep pounding in the ground. So that changed. Strikeout rate's going to be the strikeout rate, but someone with this kind of tools, like, you can strike out 30% of the time and still hit 260. Like, I think that's certainly sustainable for Ellie De La Cruz. So hell of a season. And the guy is bordering on a top five pick. Like, I honestly thought about him at number three in our meatball draft, went Judge, but it was a little bit of a thought.
In the two drafts so far, he has gone third and sixth. So yeah, ADP of 4.5 for Ellie De La Cruz right now. And that's going to be a popular spot, I think, for the rest of draft season. The man that many debated, Ellie versus Lindor, was the next off the board, ADP of 29, fifth shortstop off the board, finished fourth at the position. Mr. Lindor obviously had a slow start to the year, and many thought, man, this was a horrible pick, and yet he does it again. 33 home runs, 29 steals, almost back-to-back 30-30 seasons, and 152, eight fewer games, so he probably would have got it if he got the 160. Hit 273, though. Best batting average for Lindor since 2018, and scored 107 runs. He only played 152 games because he missed most of the last couple weeks of the season with the back injury. But Lindor had a monster season, and I still think he's a heck of a ball player, even though some may say he's getting old because he is 30, but still pretty, pretty good.
Yeah, especially through April when Lindor was hitting, what was he hitting? He was hitting pretty much 200 through April. Example number 863, that this is a long ass season, and Francisco Lindor more than made up for that slow start. It is funny, the Ellie versus Lindor debate. I feel like it's kind of like our beer bet of Judge and Soto. It's kind of like we both kind of did pretty well. One beat the other, but you certainly didn't lose, I don't think, in that ADP battle. So I do wonder, like, again, 2025 take, but you do wonder with back problems in his 30s, what's going to happen there going forward. But man, he's been fun to watch, and that has only carried forward into the postseason as well.
Yep, totally agree on that one. Out of the top five, shortstop, first, seventh, sixth, third, fourth. So all of them got the job done for you one way or another.
Yeah, no matter what. Yeah, if you went early on shortstop, you were very happy. You were very happy.
And they all were taken on the top two rounds of a 15-team league. You got at least, 16 steals. Most of them had 20 plus. They all had 19 or more homers and hit for average. So you were very, very thrilled. Most of them had over 100 RBI or runs scored, it felt like, as well. So a lot of good things coming from the shortstop position early on, and it continues to get good. And we have a CJ Abrams question later, so we'll talk a lot now. We'll answer some more later on him. Abrams was the sixth shortstop off the board, ADP of 35, finished 11th at the position. And a lot of people were not happy with CJ's season because he didn't steal as many bases as they hoped. He stole 31 bags after stealing 47 the year before, but still had 20 home runs, 79 runs scored, and hit 246, almost the same average as he has every season in the bigs. But I think people had higher expectations for CJ Abrams. What's for your thoughts on what took place? Because in the end, still a very productive season. Like, if his batting average is a little higher, he's right in line with everybody else ahead of him.
Yeah, and Abrams was super polarizing. I was certainly pro Abrams, took him at a bunch of spots in the third round, and like in hindsight, not the best pick, but totally. I mean, didn't for as polarizing as he was, certainly didn't blow up in her face. It's a couple things here. A, it's a testament to the position that C.J. Abrams had a 2030 season and finished outside the top 10.
Yep.
At shortstop, granted,
probably third at second base.
I know. Granted, 79 runs, 65 RBI, not the best counting stats, and he only hit 246. That plays a little bit into it, but still.
Well, he likes to gamble on things on and off the field, so that's probably part of the problem.
My man's season did end at 8 a.m. in a casino somewhere, which honestly is you don't read too much into it, but you do wonder off-season work ethic wise if you're investing in early round pick, is that a tiebreaker? I don't know. Probably not.
Nah.
Stolen bases. That's the last thing I want to hit on, because yes, we expected at least like 47 in 2023. That dropped to 31, especially on a Nationals team that ran wild. CJ Abrams actually did run wild, but he was thrown out 12 times. 2023, he was only thrown out four times at 47 bags, thrown out 12 times this year with just 31 steals. So only being successful on 72% of stolen base attempts. Again, that's kind of a fluky thing, stolen base attempt rate. It varies from year to year. But for someone with Abrams' speed at his age, you would have thought that would be at least above 80. I mean, it was 92% success last season. That was really the driver for Abrams not getting the stolen base. It wasn't a red light. It was just he got thrown out a ton.
Yeah, and I'll have more on that for the question later, because it's interesting that as disappointed as people were, the question is, should we have been that disappointed? That is the question. The player that went right after him didn't help with the disappointment, though. Gunnar Henderson, an ADP of 36, seventh shortstop off the board. He finished second at the position. So that will put a little damper on things if you decide to go Abrams over Gunnar, especially when Gunnar hit 37 home runs, 21 stolen bases, 118 runs scored, 92 RBIs with a 281 average. If he runs more, he's putting together a Bobby Witt season. That's the crazy part there. 719 plate appearances on the season for Gunnar Henderson. Like, this is just asinine what he put together out there in his age 23 season. So just a monster year for Gunnar. And he took such a leap this year. I don't know what to do with him next year, because it's like, is this the ceiling? Is there more? What are we doing? Because right now ADP is 7. He's gone as high as 4, as low as 10. Again, that's 2025 talk, but this was an amazing season that just has my head scratching still to how good he was.
This was nuts. A great example of a big-time prospect taking a step forward in his second full season in the majors. I did not realize how much Gunnar Henderson compiled until we just started talking about him now. That 719 plate appearances is just a massive number. I don't know how repeatable that is, unless your name's Marcus Semien. But 118 runs is just like ungodly. 92 RBI, like you said. Whatever that is, over 200 runs plus RBI from someone and have a 30-20 season is just absolutely bonkers. So I don't know how it's very difficult to repeat those counting stats in that plate appearance total, but everything beneath the hood for Gunnar Henderson looked great. The power stayed steady while also cutting down on the strikeout rate, and he ran a little bit more. Each season, he's run a little bit more in the majors. Stolen base attempt rate for Gunnar Henderson started at 6%. Then 10, and then 14% in 2024. So earning that freedom on the base pass as well, because he's been plenty successful with his stolen base attempt rate too. So just an all-around just freaking monster season for Gunnar.
Getting in front of guys like Santander and others does help a ton on that run production. Michael C. in the chat says, Gunner's a top 5 to 6, in my opinion, pick. Could take him fourth even. What's the ceiling, 45, 25, the way he played? Yeah, that's fair. If he could figure out how to steal bases, he's a legit 30-30 with 40-40 upside. Like, he's on base enough to steal a ton of bases. If he could, I just don't know if it's in his repertoire to steal that much, because that kind of surprised me.
Yeah, that's surprised. But again, he was super successful on the base pass. So your kind of break-even point for stolen base attempt rate is like low 70s. If you're up in the 80s, you deserve to keep going. So yeah, Gunnar Henderson went fourth in our meatball draft, I believe, to James Anderson. And if James takes someone that early, it's especially on the prospect side, you take note of that. So I think that's a good call out with Michael.
I'm looking forward to seeing Gunnar Henderson's player box in the forecaster, because I'm guessing there'll be a prediction in there by whoever's writing that box. That'll be fun. Yeah.
UP so, upside.
Yep. All right. The eighth shortstop off the board. Now things get interesting for the rest of the way. It's not like just boom, boom, elite. These are good, just not elite. That's Corey Seager, ADP of 38, a couple picks after Gunnar Henderson. Eighth off the board, finished 12th at the position, though. So a little bit of a bummer here. And again, it's because playing time, 123 games. That's just the Corey Seager way, because when he was healthy in those 123 games, 30 home runs, hit 278, 74 RBI, 68 runs scored. Those are really great per game numbers. He just can't put together the whole season with Corey Seager, which is a conundrum more often than not. But good season, just hard for me to keep. That's why I don't take him early. It's my argument every year we do the show for shortstops.
And it's just hard for Seager to, I mean, it's very obvious on the board. It's the one guy on the left side of our board in the top 15 that is rare stake red for stolen bases. One steal. It's very hard. You need to have a Corey Seager 2023 season where you hit freaking 330 with over 30 homers to be able to contend when you do not steal bases. And so that just sets you back a ton. And I mean, at shortstop, out of our top 15, all but three had over 15 stolen bases. All but two had over 10 stolen bases. So again, it's just from a team construction standpoint too. If you're going to take Corey Seager, if you're going to go take him early at shortstop, you need to have a plan for steals unless you're punting or whatever. So that's always kind of been the deal with Seager. Got off to a slow start because remember he had that hernia at the beginning of the season and came back like super quick. I think made opening day, but probably shouldn't have. The original timetable was later than that.
You're right. Yeah.
And then he had another hernia surgery in September. So it started to bother him again in September too. So had the surgery, so should be fine for next spring. But yeah, again, this is someone you need to have a super mega batting average and a ton of power for him to kind of return that value at shortstop. And you have to have a plan for speed if you do take Mr. Seager.
Yep, playing time and steals at a position that provides steals makes things tough for me to stomach. But that's a reasonable segment you can hear from me each and every season.
Speaking of tough to stomach.
Yeah, and I got a big stomach, so it was tough. The ninth shortstop off the board, an ADP of 41, finished 52nd at the position. 52nd. That is the third worst finish out of the top 30. Third worst. There's only Tim Anderson and Tommy Edman that finished worse. But Edman was Ryan's boy, so don't forget that. But
I mean, he didn't even play. Edman was good.
Neither
did actually, that's your boy. He was on your DFS winning winner. Team or yeah, whatever. That's
right. Yeah.
Transfer ownership to you.
Yeah, it's him and Cy-Volley. Bo Bichette finished 52nd at the position. Dude hit 225. Four homers, five steals, 81 games. It was quad injury after quad injury after quad injury. And I even looked it up before I spoke. Like, this reminded me, and what scares me going forward, because that's a soft tissue injury. It's a little Tula Whiskey-esque is what it reminds me of.
Ooh.
And when I looked up Tulo's injury history, the first thing that comes up, strained right quadricep. He also had cracked shoulder blade, chip fracture in his thumb, and many other injuries. But strained right quadricep was Tulo's first injury on the board that I saw on that sheet. Bichette's going into his free agent season. There's rumors of trades. There's rumors of a lot of things. Yeah, this was a brutal year, all things considered.
Brutal year, and one that like is so brutal because you had to hold him, right?
Yeah.
Through these injuries and through when he was on the field, he literally did nothing. So it just made it like I kind of make this point, like you almost wanted to take, it's a different position, but someone who was out for the season, Spencer Strider, because then you just know you cut free and you've got that spot for free agents. This was absolutely terrible. This, like you mentioned, this can kind of go one of two ways. It can go down the Tulo path, because this is not just a 1 year thing for Bo Bichette. I mean, this was last year too, just didn't run. And that's the thing. Like if he plays, but doesn't run,
not that good.
Right. Yeah. He's not that good. So, or on the flip side, right. If you're taking the glass half full, which the price on Bo Bichette is going to be quite cheap in 2025. You're going to say this is someone entering his age 27 season who I believe led, this is a Joe Arrico stat, I believe led Major League Baseball in hits from 21 to 23. So you're getting someone like that on the rebound, but it's all, you know, to borrow Happy Gilmore, it's not all in the hips. It's all in the quad for Bo Bichette. It's just those lower leg injuries, man. Will they go away or not? I don't know.
Yeah, in theory, if he returns to being a batting average asset with, say, 20 home runs, he's Carlos Correa. That's who you're getting.
Yeah, that's a fair. Yeah, if he doesn't run,
or he's Xander Bogaerts. Like, this is the dude you're getting. Bogaerts did run more this year. I still don't believe he runs like that, though. I don't think he does. But so yeah, Correa doesn't run, so that'd be your dude, all things considered. And they go quite a bit apart on draft day. All right, the 10th shortstop off the board. We have a lot of questions on this player later in the show. ADP of 47. Drafted 10th at the position, finished 10th at the position, and that is one O'Neal Cruz. And honestly, seeing he finished 10th is quite is interesting, but I guess when you go 2020, that'll help. 21 homers, 22 steals, 259 average for O'Neal Cruz. And he played in 146 games. I would have taken the under on that one. I did not think he made it that many games because he's always seemed like he's banged up, always. But great season. That was one of your boys. And basically, he hit for the same average as Ellie, just couldn't run like Ellie.
Yeah. Or at least to the point. We still had 22 steals, but yeah, that's 45 fewer than Ellie. Interesting that for all of the like polarizing, O'Neal Cruz is either going to be the best shortstop in a game or he's going to fall apart. He was picked 10th and he finished 10th. It's like kind of a straight line border, boring outcome. 2020 season, I guess he is my boy, even though I didn't have him on any team. But our beer bet was Bichette Cruz, right?
Yes. Bichette Cruz, yes. Man. Not even close.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about him on the listener questions, but I do think there is room for growth here. With Ellie, and I try not to comp them, even though it is kind of the lazy thing to do. It's a lot of strikeouts, a lot of ground balls, so we do need that kind of launch angle tweak with O'Neal Cruz if he wants to get over 20, 25 home runs. But good season for him. Not great, but good.
Yep, it was good. Michael C. says, Bichette's going around rounds 10 to 11. Are you in? I don't think so, unless he's a middle infielder. He'd have to be a middle infielder, and that still seems pretty rich for me.
I think I'd be in once on one team. I do it once.
That's fair. I guess I do enough teams where I should probably have at least one, but yeah, fair enough.
Good point. It makes sense to me. 10, 11.
All right. A couple guys we've talked about already now because they're multi-position at second base as well. First off, the 11th shortstop off the board is Nico Horner with an ADP of 78. He finished 15th at shortstop, and he finished, can you guess, Ryan?
What?
Eighth at second base. 15th at shortstop, 8th at second base. So that's pretty entertaining there for Nico. Do you have anything to add on him? Because we talked about him the other day. A lot of good, no power.
Nope. I got nothing else. If you can make out my scratched up second base episode voice, we covered Nico last show. Same with the next two guys. Yeah.
We covered Hyosung Kim, ADP of 98, 12th shortstop off the board. Finished 25th at the position. At second base, he finished 24th at the position, so that's close at least. That's in the ballpark. We got that going for us. The 13th shortstop off the board, Xander Bogaerts, finished 29th at shortstop. 29th at shortstop, 27th at second base. So those two kind of were the same roundabouts, and maybe it's because there's no power on either side of them. That could be a big factor of the player rater. When discussing that, any other thoughts on the teammates in San Diego?
No, I just have one kind of higher level point. Like, the shortstop did kind of fall apart right around here. So if you see the board, like basically out of the top 10, only one was a true bust. That was Bo Bichette. Everyone else you're somewhat happy with, even if it's TJ Abrams, Corey Seager, like they didn't go belly up or anything. But once we get to Bichette and then this Nico Horner, Kim, Bogaerts, Volpe, Swanson, we'll talk about, were kind of okay. There was definitely, you kind of want to look at those cliffs at each position. this isn't to say this is where the cliff is going to be in 2025, but I see a pretty big drop off after that, like top eight or nine in shortstop to this next kind of group here.
Yeah, and it goes back to how we started the show. There's 12 shortstops going to the first 60 picks right now. We talked about the meatball draft guys going early. It's because of this drop off. Like when you're in the draft room, it feels, that's why I took Adamus. It felt like so early that night we drafted. In reality, it's not that early. Looking at these other drafts, it drops off very rapidly, all things considered, on these boards. The 14th shortstop off the board, the ADP of 107, Anthony Volpe, finished 16th at the position. Higher than I would have expected, but dude hit 243, kind of got it going at parts of the season. 12 homers, 28 steals. The steals helped him a ton, and he scored 90 runs. So quietly a much better season than I want to give him credit for, because, yeah, Ryan, it was brutal at times for Volpe. Some very, very down months, especially in the batting average department, especially September, hit 176 to finish the year. But what's your thoughts on what Volpe did? Because better season than I expected, but I think there was just such high expectations. I don't even know if he met those.
But it looked like he was going to through April or May. I mean, through May, he had 6 homers, 11 steals, and was hitting like 270, 280 with a really good OBP. Like, it looked like Anthony Volpe in his age 23 season was going to take off through the first 2 months of the season. And then yeah, kind of did the anti-Lindor, I guess, and faded as the season went on. He still gets a ton of playing time, despite, and I probably could have said this last year, a 293 OBP is terrible. A 364 slug is pretty bad. Yet Anthony Volpe continues to play every day, 688 plate appearances for the Yankees. That's why you get 90 runs. That's his saving grace. But if the Yankees ever decide to, I don't want to say pull the plug, because this is still like a very talented kid, but if they in the short term don't want that lack of output with the bat in the lineup, Anthony Volpe suddenly, without 700 plate appearances, becomes very, very average. And he was just okay with 700 plate appearances. So I think more downside than upside with Volpe. However, this is kind of your spiel, but who's to say he can't take another big step forward in his age 24 season? So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm not writing him off. And as draft season went on last year, I became more interested in giving him a shot because of the power speed. Like he has a 2020 type talent in a good lineup. So I'm still interested in Volpe. It's just, I guess, 243. I don't know. Maybe it could be better still, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But it was still a good season, all things considered. Yep. Better than Bichette. So it's got that going for him. Yeah. 15th shortstop off the board, finished at 18th at the position. That was when Dansby Swanson, talking about a guy that started horrible but finished well. Swanson hit 18 homers, stole 19 bags while hitting 242. I know I dropped him in many 12s because most people did as well. Dude hit 212 in the first half of the season. A 303 average with 4 homers in September saved his rear end in a big, big way. But what's your thoughts on Swanson? Because a guy that I think many thought, okay, I can wait. Get Swanson at short, going to be hitting the middle of the Cubs lineup. Things will be good. It was not good at all.
No, and it kind of was only good. Kind of took off after I traded him to Ray Murphy in Tout Wars in August. It randomly had 8 steals in August. Before that, by month, it was 3-1-1-2. And all of a sudden, the guy turns into Ellie De La Cruz in August. Dansby, for as much as the kind of in-season ebbs and flows were, he did kind of end up where we thought he was. I think, to your point, the shallower the league you were in, you probably moved on and did not get the fruits of your labor in those last 2 months. Whereas if you're in a deeper league, like I don't think Dansby Swanson was cut in 15 teamers or very few of them, and certainly not any like NL only leagues. If you kind of weathered the storm and hung on, you kind of ended up with more or less what you thought, which is like modest 5 category production, a meh batting average, but ton of playing time. Got the 80 runs scored, 66 RBI. So I don't know, just kind of like a, I don't know, boring season. Although within the season, it was a roller coaster.
Yeah, I'm still very interested in Dansby. I dropped him in most places. I know I've picked him up in at least one of them because he was dropped in almost every 12 I can remember. It was just the way of the world. He was so bad. But I think we saw the talent that is there. That Cubs team's going to be pretty similar, I think, next year. So there is room for some optimism, I will say, when it comes to Dansby Swanson. But we'll see. Time will tell on that one.
Dansby or Bo Bichette?
I'll take Dansby.
I think so, because
he'll run.
Yeah.
I don't think Bichette will. Bichette did it one time. Trust me. I used to be a big Bichette will run guy, and Toby told me I was foolish. Bichette did it one time. Toby like laughed and said it'll never happen again. Toby's smarter than me. So it's pretty
simple. Oh, yeah, he's smarter. Smarter than us combined. He's right, though. Yeah. Bichette had the 125 stolen base season. Outside of that, 13, and then nothing above 5.
Yeah. We would have our previews, and he kept trying to challenge me, like, what proof do you have he'll run? I'm like, he's going to, I got his, you know, it's caveman logic, you know, and
he's young, he'll run.
Yep, pretty much. That was, yeah, theory. All right, let's go 16 through 20 here. We talked Tyro Estrada last episode. That's a lot of red. That's medium, medium rare, and pink. Just women say that's rough. We talked
about bad that we're now like equating doneness in beef to fantasy baseball stats. But
welcome to my world.
I'm kind of here for it.
If we were a 420 show, we have the green side covered too, but we're not. So we got that going. The 17th off the board, though, at first, there's no way he was drafted high because everyone knew Trevor Story would be missing time. Still, ADP of 153. Finished 71st in the position, but that's a big grain of salt because when he got hurt, he wasn't supposed to play much this year. He came back and I thought looked really good in a limited sample. Like, there's still holes, obviously, but for a guy that was rusty, finished 255, 2 homers, 6 steals, 9 runs, and 10 RBIs in 26 games. Yeah. I liked what we saw from Trevor Story. Now, you could say you're going to be concerned with injuries for the rest of his career. I get it. But what we saw last year, because that's what we're still talking about, what are your thoughts on what we saw from Trevor Story? Because he finished 71st, but we all know why he finished 71st.
Right. And I mean, it was a fluke thing. I mean, it was him diving after a ball in the hole in shortstop and just landed wrong on his shoulder. And like, maybe that's not totally fluke. Like, it's not as fluky as getting hit with a ball or something. But I feel like that's just kind of a bad beat if you took Trevor Story. I think it's a great sign that A, he came back in September, because I believe by the time he came back, Boston was out of it. There was no real reason to rush him. So I don't think there's any health concern for Trevor Story, especially the fact that he came back and played well and was active on the base pass. Like, if they're worried about his shoulder, probably not going to steal 5 bases in September, meaningless September games. So if there's any kind of discount on Trevor Story, I know he went later than 153 in our meatball draft. I really like that. You took him?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. That was a freaking terrible pick. Trevor Story sucks. No, yep. That's good. What round did you get him in?
I think it was either 12 or 13. I'd have to go back and check. Somewhere in there.
Hold on. Given that no one cares, but for the record, 11, no, 12th round. One round after your boy.
After Fitz, yeah. Yep. Huh. Yep. Got to just load up on the position, see where it goes. Speaking of loading up on the position, my starting shortstop in that draft is the 18th.
How many shortstops do you take?
Hey, as many as I need, okay? It's a DC. Hell? You need depth, Ryan. You need depth. When you have all your shortstops with red X's by them later in the year, yeah, and I'm starting three.
Yeah, the problem is none of them qualify at third base, so Royce Lewis, that's going to be tough.
So that's what Alex Bregman's for. Zip it.
I know.
And Jonah Bride, who I picked up recently. Zip it. he had a good year. Do not clown on Jonah Bride. We'll talk about him next week, probably. Willy Adames, 18th shortstop off the board, finished 5th at the position. God, this is great, especially a year after kind of letting us down, us Adames believers, I should say. Bounced back in a huge way in 2024. Dude hit 251, 32 bombs, 21 stolen bases, 93 runs, 112 RBIs. Played in 161 games, by far the most in his career. Monster season, 28 years old. It could be a career year. People can make that argument. Totally understand that. At the same time, I still think what we saw in 2023 was like the floor of what we got. And if this is the ceiling, I'll still settle for the middle. But I think he is this good.
I do think this is the ceiling. It was just a perfect confluence of, again, getting up to close to 700 plate appearances, but also doing it in a year where the Brewers were just so damn good, right? Because like Willy Adames, he only hit 250, but to get 93 runs and 112 ribbies, like that's
amazing. Mean. He got all those ribbies with the best catcher in the world in front of
him. It was a great year to be a Willy in, yes, in Milwaukee.
Clip it.
We'll just leave it at that. And again, this kind of perfect storm of plate appearances and a great lineup. Stolen bases, right?
Yep.
Five steals in 3 years ago, then eight, then five, and then 21. Stolen bases are just so damn hard to project. They can just kind of come out of nowhere. I have no idea what that number settles to next year, but Willy Adames was awfully efficient on the base pass, successful 84% of the time. And again, once you're in the 80s, it just behooves teams to keep sending you because you continue to be successful. So we always knew Willie had the power, like the barrel rate and everything, that's all pretty consistent with what he had shown in previous seasons. But to do that and run on a team that was on a lineup that was awesome, to get those almost, so yeah, over 200 runs plus RBI. Hell of a season for Willy Adames. I probably argue it's a ceiling, but for now we'll look back and that was a great year. If you waited, right, like one round after Trevor Story, two rounds after Thyro.
Well, heck, after wow. O'Neill Cruz, things got dicey. So you basically went from pick 47 to Willy at 177. You could have skipped all those guys just fine.
Exactly,
and been happy.
Yep. So big time difference what you did in those middle rounds there with Short.
And he's probably more like a 25 home run guy, but at least we know the 30 power is there. The steals are just tough, like you said, since the new rules got implemented 2 years ago. Like I talked with Ben on Bench with Bubba, we recorded earlier, the 80th percentile since the rule changed the last 2 years jumped from like 130 to like 185 at the position for overall for stolen bases. Yeah. So, and we talked about Matt Chapman running. It's just such a wild card now of what's going to take place in that regard. Like you said, if a team sees that a dude can, you know, execute at 70 to 80%, because look at was like a Rosarena and some other guys, their rates were horrible. They said just run. So we'll see. You never know. Philosophies, I guess. All right, the 19th shortstop off the board, Ezekiel Tovar, finished eighth at the position. The year, you know, hit 269, 26 home runs, 83 runs to 78 RBIs. That's great. Started out really good. Kept hitting off and on throughout the season. Finished well, obviously. The six steals, though, was a massive bummer. I think a lot of us expected more steals from Ezekiel Tovar. I know I did, because I had a lot of Tovar shares. And he almost, if he wasn't producing in the other categories, I could have considered him a Gene Segura, because I just figured he was, you know, doing everything for me. Like, I have to worry about him. And then you see the six steals, it's more like a, oof, that in a 12-teamer, everything else plays well, but that's a stolen base hole in a 12-team league. So that does sting a little bit.
And thrown out five times. So probably why I didn't run a whole lot.
If you're
basically 50-50 on the base pass, which is weird for Ezekiel Tovar, because he does have like raw speed. The raw speed, I'll pull up Savant while I'm chatting here. His speed score on HQ is pretty fast. So it's just kind of weird. Like I mean, base running is a skill. It's not just all speed. It's reading everything, but. Let's see. Where's his? I never looked this stuff up. Sprint speed, 71 percentile. So not elite, but he's got some wheels. Disappointing to only go 6 for 11 on the bases. Also disappointing, like the plate skills are rough. Like a 3% walk rate and almost 30% K rate. Like from an OBP and real baseball standpoint, that's kind of tough. I feel like Ezekiel Tovar kind of sold out for a ton of power, and it kind of worked. I don't know if he hits 270 again.
He's young. I remember that. Young.
He is young. Absolutely. So, but if we're just talking 2023, it was solid. I mean, to wait till pick 180 and get a top 10 shortstop, like, and could have been even better if the Rockies were a legitimate baseball team. But they're going
to be the same problem next year. I hate to break it to Rockies.
Yeah, fans. That's not going to change. It's not going to change. For all the Rockies fans listening, A, I feel damn bad for you. But B, yeah, it's not going to change.
Not changing anytime soon. The 20th shortstop off the board, ADP of 218. So we're dropping past 200 now. Finished 13th at the position. That's Jeremy Pena. This is a guy that back in 2022, 22 homers, 11 steals. Then dropped to 10 homers and 13 steals. bounced back nicely in 2024, his age 26 season, hit 266, where he's kind of hit throughout his career. 15 homers, though, 20 steals, and a combined almost 150 runs in RBIs. I think this is probably more the guy we can potentially see going forward, and that makes for a very quality shortstop if you can wait in drafts. So, like, really, I think it's a really, really solid season for Jeremy Peña.
Yeah, and another one who was kind of thrust into the limelight pretty early in his career and has continued to improve. He's a little bit older. He's this will be age 28 season. I feel like he should be a lot younger, but in every season, the strikeout rate has improved. In every season, the swinging strike rate has improved. And in every season, the stolen bases have improved. So a nice kind of additional step forward for Jeremy Peña. The power has kind of never been there, but I don't know if he can kind of get this kind of modest five category production, I guess he signed up for it again, but only 15 homers is a little bit of a bummer. I don't see a whole lot to think there's more there.
He'll be a fun comparison with another shortstop we'll talk about shortly. Let's put it that way. The 21st shortstop off the board, ADP of 219, finished 19th at the position, and that's Sedane Rafaela. And this is an intriguing one to me because it was a very, very roller coaster season if you rostered Sedane. Finished 246, 15 homers, 19 steals, 145 runs in RBIs. That's great. One thing that's kind of a plus, he played 10 games at second, depending on your league formats, of course, 52 games at short, and he played 88 games in the outfield, so he'll be shortstop outfield eligible, so that's plus as well. But when I want to mention roller coaster, he hit 186 in March and April, then 239, then 304, then 287, 260, 191. It was like up, down, up, down. He had a monster 5 homers in May, but then it was kind of, and 4 homers in July, otherwise nothing crazy. It was just a really tough year, unless you're in a deep, like 12s, he was added and dropped a lot, so I'm trying to say. Yeah. So good fantasy season in the end, but a very, very tough one to just play the game all season with.
Yep. Yep, for sure. I think you nailed it there.
Personal experience. That's why it was easy for me to talk about.
Yeah, sounds like some scar tissue there. But I don't know. Power was just okay for Sedan Rafaeli. But again, you don't want to look too much into just 1 year stats for this guy. This is someone who's, I mean, this was first full season. Age 25 next year, signed that huge contract before the season started. I do wonder from a real baseball standpoint, a 274 ABP, that is tough to stomach. But Boston, the thing with Rafaeli is Boston, they're playing him. Like they did not, just despite all the ups and downs,
he's a gold glover. That's playing time was there.
Yeah. You're right. The defense certainly helped with that. And I don't see that changing either next year.
You know who he could be based on? Okay. This might be a bad comp, but hear me out. So we see this stat line. It's good. Not great. Elite defense will keep him out there. Team contact's much better. Could he be next year's Brenton Doyle type?
Ooh.
I think it's there.
Why not?
Yeah, so I think that's a guy that I could see taking that next step. He took the bumps and bruises of the first full, season in the bigs. Could maybe some. I think I didn't like how he was moving around so much. They just need to put him in a position. He's young. Just let him play. And with his gold glove defense, I think if they stick him in center field, let him play, I think the production will follow at the plate. So something to think
that's,
about.
That's an interesting comp. I know there will be, I'm sure, many articles. Who is this year's Brenton Doyle written? But.
October 17th at 9:58 p.m. Pacific time.
We were first, damn it.
Document that, damn it. yeah. I know Big Fantasy doesn't like to talk about us, but here you go. The 22nd shortstop off the board, ADP of 254, finished 9th at the position. The man, the myth, the legend, Zach Neto. 249 average, 23 bombs, 30 stolen bases. Good season, batting average is a lot less to be desired for. Obviously, was hitting like 9th forever, so that did not help. The counting stats moved up in the order, started producing quite a bit. What I was going to say, Jeremy Peña and Neto have a lot of similarities in my brain. A lot in my brain. I think Neto's better, I will say that. Yeah. I say that, but team context, point goes to Peña. And it's just like, is this the ceiling for Neto, or is there more to Zach Neto? That's the million-dollar question. He is only 23, so he's got that going as well. Man. but great season. And trust me, I enjoyed all of it. So just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got more power than Pena, more stolen base. I mean, he had 30 steals. I don't think this is Zach Neto's ceiling. And again, the James Anderson theory. I think James took Neto. He's taking him in the fourth round.
Yeah, his ADP is 60 fifth right round. Now. His ADP is 60 right now. He's the 12th shortstop off the board.
God, so you are gonna have to pay up.
Yep.
But you probably should. I mean, I everything that I saw from Zach Neto was fully legit. And you mentioned the team context of just being buried for some reason in Ron Washington's brain. Ninth for most of the season was not great. Again, that probably doesn't change a whole lot next year. Maybe Neto starts to hit leadoff more, like as he should, but the team context around him kind of all depends on whether or not Mike Trout is healthy and how long that lasts for. But this was a great year for Zach Neto. Had a full green light, so that part of the team context equation, Ron Washington, for all the crap we give him, said he was going to run, and they ran. Yeah. So, that you know, I think Zach Neto is a decent bet to go back to 30 steals again and at 34 barrels. So, and again, first full season in the majors. This guy's going to be entering his age
24
season. So, yep. Big things ahead for Zach Neto. But yeah, it's very interesting that you're definitely going to have to pay up.
It's like, do you want Willie Adames or Zach Neto? It's fun conversations. A lot of time to discuss that. Yeah. Michael C. says batting average goes to Pena, but Neto has more fantasy juice, batted top three for the Angels late in the seasons, and he should until maybe Rengifo comes back and pushes him out. I don't know, but we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Is Rengifo free agent?
I will let you know when we get to him shortly because I have a different page up, but I'll check that out because I think he's got another year or two, but I could be wrong. The 23rd shortstop off the board, finished 23rd at the position. That is Carlos Correa, and he had a really good year, all things considered. I'll say that much. He was hurt a lot because that's what Carlos Correa does. He played in 86 games, but he hit 310 with 14 home runs, and he had 110 runs in RBIs in 86 games. So all in all, a really good season, but this is just a rinse and repeat injury concern with Carlos Correa.
Yeah, Rengifo has one more year. As I skip over Carlos Correa.
Yeah, there we go. Carlos Correa. Fair enough. The Rengifo important stuff, the mascot gets priority on this show. We know this. Right,
exactly. And so Rengifo has one more arb year. He's 2025 is his last arbitration year. So if we can pony up enough cash on this podcast, I know we have
at least like
tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of listeners. If we can pony up $5 million, he makes 4.4 this year. We might have a shot at Rengifo in 2026.
Yes, permanently on the show. I'm in. Oh, with the Angels. Gotcha.
No, on the show.
Yeah, then I'm in. I bet you his price is a lot cheaper to do a weekly show. But yes, I'm with you. I like the math, though. I like the math. That was pretty quick stuff there. It's almost like you had a rock and a slab with you to make that happen. The 25th shortstop off the board in your backyard, ADP of 300, finished 47th at the position, J.P. Crawford. I'm kind of giving up on J.P. Crawford these days.
Yeah. Agreed. And unless you're like in OBP leagues, he did lead off most of the time. Kind of lost the leadoff role to Victor Robles by the end of the season in Seattle. But this is just a compiler who, I think Spike, what do you have, 20 homers in 2023?
Yeah, and he went to Driveline.
He must have forgot everything on what he did there. But yeah, no, just very little category juice. This is someone, actually, I think Steve Weimer took J.P. Crawford in the 27th round, just a kind of a volume play, I'm sure. But from a per plate appearance type of thing, I'm kind of over J.P. Crawford as well.
Yep, I'm with you there. After that, you got your final five, 26 through 30. It's pretty bleak. Tim Anderson, we know how that ended. Willie Castro, we talked about last week. Impressive, but yeah, still tough. Tommy Edman finished 54th of the position, but he's actually hitting cleanup and producing for the Dodgers in the postseason. So there you go. Then there's Bryce Terang, 29th off the board, ADP of 336, 14th at shortstop, 4th at second base. We talked about him a bit on the last episode, Ryan, but what else do you have on Mr. Bryce Terang, who is absolutely outstanding?
That's all I got. Just that 4th to 14th thing between the two positions. That's wild to me.
And then the last shortstop at ADP 351.
My man.
Finished 39th at the position. Is your man, Ahmed Rosario. .280 average, 3 homers, 13 steals, and a couple ball clubs. So what do you got on Amed Rosario?
No, I mean, I'm going to be like 58 years old on this podcast saying, I wish Amed Rosario could play every day. I don't know. Playing time's just not there. But the dude is good. Dude is good. He just doesn't play. That's unfortunate. And he qualifies like, well, for next year, it's only second in outfield, but in season, he qualified second, third, short, outfield.
He was everywhere in season because with the Rays outfield injuries, he was playing all over. The outfield was hurt, and then they obviously lost a shortstop, and then a second baseman. They had all kinds of holes. That's why Richie Palacios has second base eligibility now to go with his outfield. It's like it's wild in Tampa Bay right now, or was wild in Tampa Bay, I should say. All right, recapping the top 30, the first like seven. Or like the top 10 was still very good outside of Bichette. Then it gets murky. Then you have a gap there with 18 to 22 were pretty productive.
Yeah.
And then it's ugly again. So if we say 18 to 22, that gives us five guys. Let's say top 10. So there's 15 shortstop that pretty much you were really pumped to have on your team based on their ADP. The rest of them you had to kind of make it work.
Yeah, which is more than most positions we've talked about so far. Like a solid top 15 is pretty deep.
Not to mention a couple standouts that were not on this list. Ryan, who do you have for the breakouts at the shortstop position?
There wasn't too much. All I've got is so these, again, quote-unquote breakouts, anyone drafted outside the top 30 or undrafted that finished like top 20 at the position. There was Mason Winn, who finished 17th, had a 355 ADP. And then Josh H. Smith was undrafted and qualified everywhere. So you may or may not have played him at shortstop, but he finished 21st at the position. So didn't really have that kind of like we did at second base where we did have a few breakouts. Granted, the bar for a quote unquote breakout at second base wasn't as high, but there weren't any real like diamonds in the rough at shortstop. You kind of had to go early or kind of pick the right guy in the middle rounds to get the most out of this position.
It seems like it's just something that's changed a lot over the last like 5 years because you used to be able to wait on shortstop because shortstop was so deep and it didn't matter. But now it's still deep, but it's deep early. And so you still have to be aggressive. Where in the past, you could wait and survive.
That was kind of what we were saying before the season was like, yeah, shortstop's deep, but after the top
drops off,
whatever we said, it does drop off. And that kind of did play out here. Yeah. If you waited too long and you didn't take, like Willy Adames or Tovar or Jeremy Pena or Neto, you got burned at a position where a bunch of other people in your league
flourish
are making hay. Exactly. Yeah. So,
Michael C. had a comment earlier I saved for now. He says his theory on the position is platoon splits have taken hold even on good teams. Shortstop is one of the only positions teams can't and won't play matchups, which is 100% true because you want that defensive shortstop. Yep. So that's a really astute observation. From Michael C. on that one.
Agreed. Yep, that's a good point.
All right, got a couple listener questions / thoughts from the old Twitter here. We have a handful, which is pretty nice. Our buddy BP at Futures _ Bet says, despite 20 homers and 31 steals, I think CJ Abrams underachieved big time. Maybe I expected too much. Can he take the next step? Ryan, if I may have the floor on this one, I have something for this. So a little plug. Ben and I recapped projections on how they worked out this year. And I wanted to highlight CJ Abrams because we actually talked about him on the show today. And it's funny this question came up. The answer to your question is part of your question. It says, maybe I expected too much. And I think that's the biggest problem from everybody here. Because if we followed projections, which I know most of us use in our analysis, CJ Abrams was projected for 81 runs, 16 home runs, 62 RBIs, 37 stolen bases. CJ Abrams had 79 runs. That's two fewer. 20 homers, four more. 65 RBIs, three more. 31 steals, six less. He was basically 3 points. And if you listen to the show, Ben describes it all off the main, main something or mean something. You just got me tongue tied now. I knew this earlier. God damn it.
Mean average. Shit, I went to college, so I should know.
Yeah, you should know this stuff.
But major is Ben.
Basically, the closer to zero
that number is. Mean average error.
Error, there you go. The closer to zero that number is almost like, if it's a zero, that means the projection was basically like rock solid. So having a mean average error of 3 shows that it was pretty darn close. And I just read you the numbers. Like, he basically produced to what the projection said he would. And some guys overachieve and some guys underachieve. That's obvious. Some of it's due to plate appearance projections and whatnot. But even when you look at the mean average error factors in plate appearances, because he was projected for 565 at-bats, he had 541. So he was within an average of 50 at-bats. So this like shows you, just wanted to say, I think most of us that liked C.J. Abrams had higher expectations than the projections had. And something we talked about a lot on the show, Ryan, is young players' projections can be wrong on, because young players can, you want to have the expectations on when you draft them. That's kind of how you do it. But I think you have to take a step back in the process when it doesn't go right. How far off was it from what we should have expected, I guess?
Yeah. And it wasn't like C.J. Abrams was a pure prospect this season. We did have a full season of data. So we probably, and I think anyone who drafted in the third round, again, me, expected more than what obviously what the projection said. That's a really good find by Ben. That thing was spot on. That's wild.
Yeah, so that was kind of fun because we were scrolling through it and I saw that. So we discussed him for a bit, and it was like, because it was a polarizing name, because like this question, that's why I laughed. The first question we got, I sent it straight a picture to Ben. I'm like, see what the first question is for tonight. He started laughing because we had the same discussion, that it's just like, it was a very polarizing name, but in the end, was it as polarizing as it should have been? It's just, I guess it's perception type thing. Thomas Travato has a couple questions. First one, love to see what O'Neill Cruz can do. He's not LED of the Cruz. Maybe we can stop with that comp, but his stats have to continue to improve, right? Do you think let me combine it with this. Is O'Neill Cruz going to pop 30 home runs next year? What's holding him back? Is it just line drive, ground ball rate? So kind of a two-parter there with O'Neill.
I think that's pretty much all it is. It's a really low fly ball rate for O'Neill Cruz, 34% last year. And even still, like, even with that, the guy had 57 barrels. Like, that should jump. I don't know how Pittsburgh factors on the homer to barrel rate, if it's a hitter friendly park or not. You can probably pull that up while I'm talking, but 57 barrels to only have whatever, 21 home runs. That's a pretty low rate. So let's see, Pittsburgh.
Is it pulled barrels? Is it not pulled barrels? There's a lot of factors
involved. Well, and actually, Pittsburgh as a park is only 46% homer to barrel. So that's probably holding back O'Neill Cruz as well. A little bit is the ballpark.
Yep. There you go. So elevate more. That's always the answer if you want more home runs. And you mentioned it with Ellie out the gate. He changed that this year, and home runs are flying. We know O'Neill can hit moonshots. Just got to change it. It's just like Vladito. There's a theme with some of these guys. And O'Neill will do it 1 year, and he'll just be like, holy crap.
And that's the thing. Like, I always remember this. Eno Saris said this at First Pitch Arizona a couple years ago. It's like, obviously, a home run, you have to have two things. You have to hit it hard, and you have to hit it in the air. If you have to pick one for, like, a skill that a hitter has, you want the guy who can hit the ball hard. It's not easy to just adjust, in quotes, adjust your launch angle, but it's easier to do that than it is to wake up and roll out of bed and say, I'm going to start hitting the ball harder. Yeah. Like, not many people, you know, you have an actual, like, there's a baseline talent there. O'Neill Cruz has it. Kenny loft a little bit more. Again, not easier said than done, but certainly the foundation is there.
Most definitely. Thomas also asks, is it a viable strategy to draft two early shortstops next year due to the power speed of many of these studs? If you did this year, you profited. If you can build the rest of your team, I 100% think you should.
Great strategy. Yeah, I've seen teams start with two shortstops the first two rounds before and win their leagues.
Maybe last year? The year, maybe like 2023? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I feel like you did for some reason.
I don't think it was the first two. It might have been really early, but it. It's all about picking the right players as opposed to a lot of this kind of position stuff and balancing that. So, get your guys. You know, maybe don't start three shortstops or whatever, but like
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah. Who would do that? That's crazy. 12 rounds, three shortstops, stupid. But yeah.
Yeah, don't be like Bubba. But yeah, no, I think that's not only just a viable strategy, that's probably a good strategy and suited you well in 2024 if you took two early shortstops.
Yeah, one, it's kind of that thing I know we talk about a lot, especially on the preview of the positions, is I almost just completely forget the position. Just get your stats. That's what's all you really matters in the end. Get your stats and go from there. That reminds me, I wanted to check something out here real quick. Tyler Fitzgerald finished 24th of the position. We got no love on this show. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Hey, man, you didn't. Didn't finish 21st like my man Josh H.
No, I'm just joking. And then Dave Petrosian.
But he did it in about half the plate
appearances. Yeah, that's where I was going with that. Right. Prorated. Yeah. Dave Petrosiello has a quote, says, I think in early drafts, Neto is going like pick 60. I loved him this year and had him in all three OCs, and he's full priced now. Can you get on board with him at that pick? His Statcast page is all blue, light blue, but blue. I think if you missed on the early shortstops, you should probably think heavily about taking Neto because the drop-off will catch up with you.
It is a price to pay. I haven't looked too much at which shortstops are going around that. But
if you want, I can tell you. I got it right here. Well, because the thing is, he goes at pick like 60, then it drops to 119. And I don't mind. Tovar's 119, Matt McClain, Bryce Terang, Bichette, Horner, Rengifo, Volpe, like these are all, and then 175 Stott. Like Jeremy Pena is going like 196. Swanson's around pick 200. Like some of these guys got to bounce back enough to be worth something there. But it's interesting. I know it's a long ways. It's only two drafts, but very interesting discussion. That's for sure.
Another one on the prorated breakout. So obviously, my breakout formula is not all that sophisticated. Xavier Edwards,
yes,
was huge and obviously very undrafted. Much. So, yes. And at 193. Current ADP.
Yeah, it is funny that we mentioned Fitz and Edwards. I think like the last month of our fab shows, all of a sudden there's middle infield guys everywhere.
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do remember that.
Like they all started popping up late. So that's something like, heck, Paul DeJong finished 28th at the position. I know we're not promoting, but just think about that out loud for two seconds.
You promoted him plenty, which turned out to be good.
Yeah, for fab, yes. Not don't draft him, but for fab, it works out pretty good for you. Like I'm just gonna hit a button here. We'll wrap up the show shortly, I promise. But if we go 31 through 60, you'll probably like David Hamilton. He got hurt, but was playing very well. So 248, a couple some home runs, and a ton of steals. He's a guy to keep in mind if the injury rehashes. Geraldo Perdomo was another dude that was much better. Orlando Arcia played well in the last month of the season. So it's a little things like that. There will be guys that show up, and you're just like, huh. These just aren't guys you want to lock in on draft days, what I'm trying to say, but there will be guys that can pick it up for you if you need it.
To put a firm finger on Dave's question, would you rather go Zach Neto because they have like the same ADP, Zach Neto or CJ Abrams?
Whew, that is good. That is really good.
I think I'd probably go Abrams.
See, I was probably gonna go Neto, but I wouldn't argue you. That's the thing. Yeah. I wouldn't argue it at all.
Not beer bet worthy. We can't do beer.
No, not yet.
Next year.
No. That starts live show forward.
after we settle our beer bets from the previous year, then we can proceed.
That is a good one though. Those are the kind of ADP baits that I love to break down in the draft season to discuss for people. That could be a lot of fun content. But something to consider. Final thoughts on shortstop. Much more entertaining episode, at least from my side of the table, compared to the last few.
Yeah, and I could talk tonight, so that was helpful as well. So I guess we'll continue on. We'll do third base
on next Tuesday. Show. Yeah, next show. Next show will be third base, and then we'll decide if we want to do something else or start the outfield. Let's keep it going. Keep the train rolling.
We've got other things to plan out and prep for. So it's a busy freaking time for us. So.
Speaking of which, about 2 weeks from tomorrow night, we'll be doing a live show we have to get ready for. So out there at First Pitch Arizona. And that will be on your podcast feed. So don't panic. You will still get the episode that will come out. But on that note, we will wrap it up. Again, if you want to golf, we got openings. If not, cool beans. But we'll be back with you guys next week to talk third base. You can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubble Bloom Pod, and I am at BDentric. This is Bubba the Bloom, episode 179. Catch you all next time.